Hey, 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 you're listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair in Studio 2 at WJCT. We have got a full show today. I was out for 2 days this week, but I came back for you. I came back just for you. Not that other person, but you specifically. So thank you. Good to see you. And let's dive into it. So today, another public transit option for Jacksonville. But where's the driver? Then what Broadway blockbusters and tribute shows are en route to Jacksonville? And in the spirit of the arts, JME is here with a curated noise from the First Coast and beyond. But first, driverless cars freely moving about the city streets seems like something out of a futuristic sci-fi movie. I can tell you I've experienced this because I was living in the West Coast for a while, and the driverless cars are all over San Francisco, and it's weird. It's really weird. The technology is being implemented in places like San Francisco and other cities, and it's getting mixed reviews. About 6 years ago, the Jacksonville Transportation Authority announced it would roll out an autonomous shuttle system. But where are they with that? Here to help drive the conversation. Do you guys notice all the puns in my copy today? That's from producer Stacy Bennett. Here to drive the conversation is Ennis Davis, urban planner and co-owner of the Jackson and Modern Cities. Ennis, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. It's always great to see you.
Yes. And like, I feel like my introduction to you is too modest because you do a little bit of everything. You're in housing, you're in urban planning. Just give me a little bit about like all the things that Ennis Davis does.
Oh, man. Let's see. So I've got about 22 years of experience in planning. Much of that is in urban planning and transportation planning. Also, I am the vice president of the Florida Trust for Historic Preservation. So we're big in historic preservation, especially in communities across the country and in the city itself. And then the Jackson Modern Cities. And also recently launched Community Planning Collaborative, which is a planning firm that is specifically works in the intersection of cultural heritage preservation, public policy, and urban planning.
So you're thinking a lot about the way public policy, government policy affects communities, about how communities are laid out, transportation issues, all that stuff. That's kind of your thing.
Yeah, it's the basket house. I mean, I started off in architecture and real estate development in the private sector, moved into public sector planning, and then also did an in-house stint with some public entities throughout the state as well. So everything kind of rolls together.
Yeah, it all kind of fits. The puzzle pieces, like, they all make sense because one is connected to the other.
Right.
All right, so we're going to dive into driverless cars. You can join the conversation. Call us at 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC on air, First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, all the places. You know the routine. Give us a call and join the conversation. So, Ennis, kind of lay out for me what autonomous vehicles are.
So, I mean, the general gist of it is, think like the Skyway. The Skyway is an automated train. Autonomous vehicle is basically a driverless vehicle. Mm-hmm. Now, how we're implementing it here in town, we could possibly be the first public transit system to put them into revenue service in mm-hmm. terms of mass transit. And so it's a little different than what's been tested in San Francisco to a degree.
Yeah, and I would say, you bring up the Skyway as an autonomous vehicle, and I never thought about it that way, but it is autonomous. Like, it doesn't have a conductor or anybody else running it. You just get in it and it runs. I guess the difference is that, like, it runs on a track, whereas, like, we're talking about shuttles that don't run on a track and will actually, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but will actually be in traffic with the average Jacksonvillian.
Yeah, I mean, the Skyway is automated, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, so we're essentially talking about driverless vehicles that will possibly operate in mixed traffic, which is one of the big challenges. And that's why you haven't really seen this deployed at this point in time, because while the autonomous technology may be, let's say, safe in and of itself in a controlled environment, we're introducing something into a human controlled environment. And as you know, we are totally unpredictable. So a lot of the testing has to try to formulate and predict what humans will do. So that's going to be the big challenge here. And that's probably one of the big concerns, I would say, that a lot of people are having in town at this point, is how are we going to do that? And then can we do that at a cost that makes sense for the taxpayer?
Yeah. And so can you kind of lay out what JTA's plans are or how to use these? Because if I understand correctly, they're shuttles, right? They're not like individual like cars. So they're shuttles that go to the Skyway or go to other JTA hubs. Like, how does that work?
So essentially, it is a guided system. You just won't see it. Like there has to be sensors and things that are put in place to make sure that these vehicles stay in their lanes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But basically, the first phase of the what's being called the Ultimate Urban Circulator is the Bay Street Innovation Project, which is basically going to run from really La Villa down to the stadium along Bay Street. Right now, I guess the plan is to operate that in mixed traffic. But eventually, after that project is complete, there's a second phase that looks at the conversion of the Skyway into an elevated version of this particular transit solution. And then the third phase or fourth phase will then be on-ground extensions into adjacent neighborhoods downtown, such as Springfield, Riverside, and San Marco.
Let me ask you, I guess the big question that comes to mind when we talk about this is, autonomous vehicles are the new shiny thing, but why not just have shuttles with drivers in them? Like, why go to autonomous? Is it cheaper? Is it safer? What's the drive behind that?
Well, I think. And I can't speak for JTA on that. I do believe is the drive there is a lot about innovation. They clearly state that whenever you hear about this this project. But I also would say from the community perspective that there is a segment of the community that says, hey, we just need transit. it's great if something like this can work. But really,
we just need to get from A to B. You just need to figure that out.
Give me a bus stop. Give me a bus stop with some shelters, or give me a proven transit solution that works too.
Yeah,
so it's about balancing those two.
Recently, I was at a rally where the UAW president, this is in California, was talking about the upcoming fight to keep drivers behind the wheels of semis, 18 wheelers, and that there's a push by big business to turn those into autonomous vehicles. And the crowd there was very much, it was a pro-union crowd, and was very much against the idea of turning the 18 wheelers into autonomous vehicles. I thought a little bit more after I left that rally and just started thinking about the plus benefits for having autonomous drivers. So we know that when you're talking about 18 wheelers, that these guys and women are expected to drive really long hours to kind of hit their marks, and especially in the world that we live in today, where everybody wants everything the day they order it, they want it to show up on their doorstep. So these guys are really being really pushed to the limits of what's possible for a human being behind the wheel. And so in that aspect, you think autonomous seems like it's going to be safer and quicker. But then when you pull back a little bit, the two big things that come to mind for me is that it may be quicker, but also what you were saying, human beings on the road are unpredictable. And so do you want a computer making decisions, split second decisions, when it comes to people? And two, the human cost of what it's going to do to our economy to remove people from behind vehicles, basically eliminating jobs. So it's kind of a twofold thing that I'm asking you there. One is, when it comes to safety concerns and the big pluses of having AI, i.e. autonomous vehicles, versus like the human factor. Do you think that's going to weigh in this conversation with JTA in the city?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, my brother's a truck driver, so you know this very well. And, you know, when I was down in Central Florida, the energy down there, we were, you know, platooning that type of technology. Mm-hmm. But when it boils down to what's proposed here in town, the reality of it is we're not to a point, and it won't be happening anytime soon, where there's just this 100% autonomous environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, here locally, we're going to have to address how we deal with the human factor. And there's no amount of money you could throw at any type of technology to change a driver who gets frustrated at something driving 15 miles an hour in front of them.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. The other side of it is the job side, right? Like, when we talk about these things, like, I tend to think that, you know, with truck drivers, there's a lot of people that do truck driving, and that creates a middle class. It's a middle class salary. And we're watching how the middle class in America keeps getting squeezed, right? Like, it just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And earlier you were talking about how JTA is always talking about innovation. And I think innovation is great. But I guess I have some questions about when innovation leaves people behind. It feels like we're at the precipice right now. And like, do we make the decision that like our economy and continuing to have a strong middle class, or creating, you know, a strong middle class is important, versus like innovation for innovation's sake? I don't know the answer to that, you know?
Yeah, I think locally we don't control that. You know, things are going to change as the future goes on. I mean, this technology, I mean, AI, I mean, today, what you can do compared to what was possible, you know, 10, 15 years, even 5 years ago, is completely different. So that is going to change. And it is a challenge, especially in the African-American community, because, like, I use my brother, for example, as a truck driver. That was, you know, he didn't graduate high school, spent some time in prison. And this was something that gave him a solution to pay for his family, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, and if you even go back, I mean, my mom was, you know, here in the 60s, and she was a telephone operator. That's disappeared. So part of this innovation thing, I think the solution is going to be, we're going to have to also find ways to invest in our communities and train people. Because, I mean, yes, we can have AI, we can have autonomous vehicles and all that, but somebody's got to operate it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. You can join the conversation at 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC on air. There's First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, all the places. We're going to go to the phone. We've got Tim in Neptune Beach. Tim, how are you this morning?
Doing well. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about, I travel down to Miami often, and they have an automated circulator down there called the Metro Mover, which has a lot of ridership, and I guess I'm trying to understand why we are looking to use or create new technology rather than just implementing what's already tried and true. And I'll listen to your response off the air.
Tim, thanks so much for your call. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to 2014, 2015, when this conversation about modernization of the Skyway, you know, popped up, there's been a lot of focus on the Skyway in and of itself, but sometimes we don't really dive into the history of how we got into certain conditions. I mean, the Skyway, yeah, it's an automated people mover. It's one of four, I guess, if you count Morgantown, West Virginia, but basically Jacksonville, Detroit, and Miami. I had won grants to experiment with this back in the 1980s. That original plan, the Skyway, was always intended to be an urban circulator specifically for downtown. It's never going to the beach. It's never going to Argyle.
Yeah.
It's never going to any of these places. But with that being said, another portion of that concept that was never built out is it was supposed to be fed riders from a regional mass transit system, whether we want to call heavy rail, light rail, streetcar, whatever,
mm-hmm.
BRT. In Miami, they had Metro Rail, which was much of a fail when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 20 years or so, Miami and South Florida have gotten really aggressive around transit-oriented development around those stations. So what's happening with the metro moving, while you see more ridership there, is you have land use that supports the transit system there. And then you have regional transit technologies that are working together to feed your riders into it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Skyway in particular, we don't have that yet. So one of these challenges, kind of one of the things about the Skyway conversation, is you can make this AV, you can make this a streetcar, you can make this BRT. If we're not feeding it with riders from areas outside of downtown, it's probably still going to struggle. If we continue to incentivize businesses to leave downtown, it's probably going to struggle.
Sure.
So, but in Jacksonville, we generally, most people kind of see the Skyway and they think Chicago L, they think, you know, the New York subway, and it's not any of those things.
It's, no.
No, it's literally the people mover you take from the airport terminal to get to your airside terminal. That's
right.
That's literally what it is. It's a horizontal elevator.
Yeah. As you're talking, like I feel like a light went off in my head, because what you're basically saying, I don't know why I never thought about this. I city planning is not something I spend a whole lot of time contemplating. But as you're laying all this out, what's really apparent to me is that city planning is the key. Like the way you talk about Miami and that they feed this transit system. And so like if they are incentivizing businesses and development in the places where people are going to get on, like it feeds it. It also helps, you know, with traffic and all sorts of things. Like it's a thought process that's going on there. And not that Jacksonville does not have a thought process going on. I'm just saying that like in order for the Skyway to actually work, there has to be more thought process about how to feed it and in what ways to feed it.
Yeah, how everything works. When I was on the Northeast Florida Regional Transportation Commission, some of the biggest counties that pushed for mass transit were places like Putnam. And we don't think about it here, but you know, for them, their aging population, all the medical centers are here.
Mm-hmm.
So they were looking for ways to get, you know, their connection by rail to Jacksonville, so their residents have access to our services.
Yeah, and we're going to go to the phone. We've got Mark in St. Augustine. Mark, how are you this morning?
Real good. You know, I'm really skeptical about this. I've been here forever. I was here when they were talking about building the Skyway Express. I thought it was a stupid idea back then, and I'm really skeptical, like I said, now. But my question is, you know, you mentioned sensors. I mean, how much is this thing going to cost? Are you having to bury sensors in the middle of the road? Do you have to, you know, rip up streets for, you know, a year and a half to do this? Or are they going to be posted on towers or what? And the secondary question is, and I think you just kind of answered it, why are we going, the first leg is going to be down in Bay Street? You know, that seems like that's very limited use. You know, it's not going to do anything for football games, not the limited amount of cars you're going to have available. I mean, why not take it to the mall or down Southside Boulevard where there's 10,000 apartments?
Hey, Mark, thanks so much for calling in. Ennis, what do you think?
All right, so I'm going to go about this a little backwards. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to the mall. Again, it's a urban circulator or more of a last mile solution. So this is the thing that gets you from an actual transit station to your last destination. So it's never going to Southside Boulevard. That you're looking at a different type of transit solution to get you to a point like that, whether it's bus or rail or whatever. Number two, I think you mentioned something about the cost. So historically, there was always a plan to extend the Skyway out to the stadium. You have the Hyatt, which is basically our convention center, even though we debate
right.
whatever we want to do with that. We have all this activity that or things that we want to see along the shipyards, Four Seasons going up, you're getting ready to redo the stadium in some type of way. So there was always a historical push to have that line extended. Now, with that being said, JTA also won federal dollars, and they've secured funding to do this initial phase, which is Bay Street.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the challenge in that is going to be, I would suggest that even if you wanted to do a streetcar or even if you wanted to do a bus, you need dedicated lanes or dedicated right-of-way.
Right.
That conversation really didn't take place when, years ago. And now I think, I know JTA recently put out a video where they talked about the need to do that. But now you got a different challenge in that to do that on Bay Street specifically. Now you're talking about taking away the parallel, the parking of the businesses that are there, and it's counterproductive to the downtown business environment. Cost wise, a few months ago, it was $44 million or so for the Bay Street segment. I know recently that jumped up to $65 million. But you're not going to have, you know, dedicated lanes. You're literally going to have a bunch of sensors and cameras kind of stationed along the corridor.
Right, right.
And there's also more things that, you know, they're planning to look at from a technology perspective than just moving, you know, autonomous vehicles down the street. But it goes back to this capacity issue when you talk about the stadium. If you got 12 to 15 vehicles that, you know, may seat, you know, 10 to 15 people, you know, we all know if you're running at 15 to 25 miles an hour, you're not moving any type of, you know, demand or crush that's coming out of a, you know, stadium. But
yeah, we got Joe on the line from Fleming Island. Joe, how you doing this morning?
Hey, good morning. I'm so used to saying good morning to Melissa, but good morning to you guys and congratulations on your advancement. Listen, I used to live right over in the Arlington area, and I think that Mayor Deegan's doing a great job by bringing autonomous transportation to Jacksonville. One of my comments on the air many times was that in order for Jacksonville to become a major city, they're going to have some sort of mass transportation rather than buses. My idea was, and if maybe one of her handlers were listening, was to create a transportation hub, and that would be at the Regency Square Mall, which is just a dying ember, but it's also centrally located to the city. Maybe they would consider that as well. But I think it's a great idea, money well spent. That's if you want to become a major player in the country.
Joe, thanks so much for calling in. What do you think about that, like setting up a transportation hub in Regency?
Well, I mean, we already have a transportation hub. We just spent, you know, $80 million or so to build the JRTC in the La Villa, which is a great building. It's next to the old railroad station. So hopefully one day we can bring, you know, inner city rail back as commuter rail comes online, those things. Yeah, so we have a hub. There's no reason that Regency can't one day be, you know, a regional hub.
You know, I think to the caller's point is that, like, in order for Jacksonville to really, you know, be a city of the future, we have to figure out this transportation thing. But specifically what we're talking about with autonomous shuttles, that's never going to be the solution to it, at least this program that we're talking about.
And I want to circle back to that, because then that gets more into a confusion of what mass transit is. This is not light rail. This is not bus rapid transit. This is not the subway you see in New York or in D.C. This is the thing that gets you to that.
Right.
So we're not having that conversation yet about what that is to get you to a big city level. And technically, you could argue we're already a big city. So as we go along this path of what this project becomes, that's where it becomes really important to start looking at cost. Because if costs keep going up and elevating at the level they are, you get into a point to where you're paying the same for what could be one of those regional mass transit projects that impact much more than downtown and the neighbors adjacent to it. But you're not getting the same bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Because you just, you know, you're in a much smaller consolidated area, and it's still, you still suffer with the fact that you need something to feed riders into this area to make it work.
So in San Francisco, and these are, it's a very different form of transportation. But in San Francisco, there are autonomous cars that, you know, basically function as an Uber.
Right.
I've never taken them. I've seen them. The cars look weird. I remember, like, driving by one the first time, and I was like, why would you trick a car out like that? Like, it looks like it does not. I don't know. I just don't find it visually appealing. I think the name of the company is Waymo or something. Waymo. Anyway, listener, you can go online. If you Google like Waymo, you can you'll pull up what the car looks like. It's kind of strange. But, you know, in San Francisco, a lot of people hate these things. And so there's a movement by Safe Street Rebels that they go and do things like they put cones on the hoods of cars, and that basically disables the car so they can't move. I'm just curious, like, if we do something like, you know, autonomous shuttles here, is that something we should be worried about? Let me refocus that question. I think that what the rebels out there in San Francisco are worried about is safety. They think that these autonomous cars are not safe. I have no idea what the numbers are on it. It seems to me like they look to be pretty safe. I think you're talking about a really different thing when you talk about Teslas and their, you know, autonomous drive system. But these cars seem different. But there's a big concern about safety when you don't have a human being behind the wheel. Do you think that's a factor here in Jacksonville?
It's a big factor. Yeah, it's a big factor. And I mean, we're going to be a test case for that when this Bay Street project is completed. I think they have to be complete by the end of 2025 or something like that. But yeah, you know, my advice to that from a, you know, transportation professional perspective would be you need dedicated lanes or something to where they're in a controlled environment, self-controlled environment themselves. When you're mixed down in traffic, you're just going to get back into, you're going to have people playing around. You might have a cat or something run across the street. I mean, who knows what happens?
Right.
And that is the safety challenge. The technology as a whole isn't there yet. And we don't know when it would be there, but, you know, we are in this, we're introducing it to a human controlled environment, and we know we are predictable as people.
Yeah.
So that is the big challenge. So the solution, I think, to that would be dedicated lanes or dedicated right of way. But again, that's a whole other conversation on if we can actually do that here in town.
Yeah. Last question. As a longtime Jacksonvillian, do you like Jacksonvillian or Jackson?
Well, you know, Jackson is the historical word. Personally, I don't care. You know, personally,
so I'm gonna say you're on my side then. If you don't care, I'm just going to draft you. So you're with me on Jacksonvillian. You heard it here first on First Coast Connect. Ennis Davis is with Al Ledson on Jacksonvillian. Anyway, with all the advances coming in the future, and basically like what you see from the city, how are you feeling about the future, so to speak, of Jacksonville when it comes to like urban planning and all of those things, that big puzzle that you're constantly thinking about and putting the pieces together for?
Yeah, I'm very excited about Jacksonville's future. You know, we've always talked about having potential, but now, you know, there's a spirit in the air. I mean, I think the economy is right. You know, City Hall is right. We have a big opportunity to take advantage of all the assets and culture that we've always had. So I'm really excited about the future here.
Excellent. Ennis Davis, urban planner and co-owner of the Jackson and Modern Cities, and just an all-around brainiac and good dude. Thank you so much for coming in.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right. We will be coming back with more, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair in Studio 2 at WJCT. And if you love performance art, FSCJ's Artist Series is kicking off next month with some well-known Broadway hits and tribute shows. FSCJ's Artist Series aims to inform, inspire, and bring entertainment to the First Coast community. Shelley Henley, publicist for FSCJ Artist Series, is here to tell me all about it. So I absolutely love the Artist Series, but I gotta be honest, Shelley, like I'm a bad theater nerd. Like I have not really checked out a whole lot of theater in the last couple years.
Oh, we understand.
So yeah, I've been busy. My theater people, I'm sorry. I don't mean to betray you. I still love it.
We hope you'll come back this year.
Well, you gotta entice me.
Oh, I will. Right, right. I will.
So please, like, tell me what's your big show this year? The one that you're the most excited about.
Well, the biggest show we have coming this year is probably Disney's Frozen. It just has such mass appeal.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, everyone loves it. It'll be here for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope everyone will get a chance to see it. That's our last show of the season. So it won't be until May. But we have a lot of other good ones in between.
Okay. What else you got?
Well, the first one will be Hadestown. The first one's going to be the Book of Mormon. That's actually a season option where you can buy the package with or without that, because it has been here before,
mm-hmm.
but it's a favorite here. It always sells out. So the Book of Mormon will be here for just 3 days in December.
I feel so bad because, like, the Book of Mormon has been out for well over a decade now, and I have not seen it.
Well, we're going to take care of that, this year.
Yeah. No, everybody I know loves it.
It is. It's a great show.
But I've not seen it. I feel like I know some of the music.
You probably do, I'm sure.
As you were talking about Frozen in my head, I was singing, let it go,
oh, yes.
Let it go.
Oh, yes. But there will be 12 new songs in the show.
New songs?
From the movie, yes. 12 okay. additional new songs for Frozen. But then Hadestown will come next. That'll be in February. And Hadestown, it's really hard to explain, but it's it delves into the underworld,
mm-hmm.
and it is a love story, you just have to come see it. It's haunting and sticks with you, they say. I haven't seen it yet, so I am very much looking forward to this one as well. And also, the music is supposed to be very good in it, and it did win 8 Tony Awards. So
wow.
Yeah. The next, we'll have Tina Turner, the Tina Turner Musical. This is a Broadway musical all about her triumphant career and how she came from such low beginnings and where she ended up. And, you know, sadly, we lost her this year, but this show will tell you all about her life
yeah.
and have all her hit songs in it.
I've seen clips of this show, and this is the one that I am absolutely definitely going to, because the actress who plays her on Broadway and the clips I've seen, oh, she just got so much energy. Like,
yes.
I mean, it's classical Tina, because, like, when Tina got going, like, Big Wheel Keep on Turning.
Yes.
She does
oh,
that.
Oh, yes.
Forget about it.
And they actually have two different people that play her in the show, because I guess it's so much
yeah.
a person can't handle it.
Yeah, I'm sure. So. I'm sure.
Then coming up next, we have Six. And this is about the six wives of Henry VIII. These girls all take the microphone and remix 500 years of history. They kind of give their version of British history. So
So I've never heard of this one. This again, like, I've been out of the loop for a bit.
Right.
Was this a big hit?
It was. It's won 23 various awards. It started in the UK, mm-hmm. I believe. And it's done very well there and here. And it's a very action-packed modern music and dancing, and it just keeps moving for an hour and a half with no intermission.
Wow. When you say, you know, it's jam-packed and it's like a modern music, it makes me think of like a Hamilton type thing.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So it's kind of, it lives in that space where yes. it's telling you history, but also having a good time.
Right, through music, all music. So it's very exciting, and people are very excited about it. And then, of course, we'll end with Frozen, and I think everyone knows what Frozen is about, but it's done beautifully. The sets, of course, are gorgeous, and it'll have 12 new songs in there, so from, you know, additional to the movie. So I know a lot of people are going to want to see that. It'll be here for 2 weeks, so we hope everyone gets an opportunity. But, you know, it's Disney. What can you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let it go, right.
Absolutely. What do you have, like, on tributes? Like, I read somewhere that you guys are doing some tributes this year.
Right. Well, tributes are so popular. You know, they're very popular. I think they say we all kind of connect with music from our high school years. So I think people are just trying to go back and, you know, relive some of that.
That
free living life. But, we do have a lot of tributes and music shows. You know, all the shows have music, but there's a lot really focused on music this year. So that will be fun. But one thing I am going to mention before I forget is we have a kickoff coming up Monday, October 2nd at the Jacksonville Center for Performing Arts. And this is to kick off our Broadway season, and people can pick up their season tickets and try out seats and that type of thing, purchase more tickets. We're going to have Bruce Hamilton there helping us out, emceeing and giving away prizes. You can win dinner from Estrella or candy making classes from Sweet Pete's, things like that.
Excellent.
And also a performance from Elsa from Disney's Frozen. She did perform on Broadway, and she'll be doing a number for us. So we hope everybody can make it. October 2nd, everyone's welcome, along with our sponsor, Vistar Credit Union. We'll be there and try to make it out. It's for everyone, and just give you an idea of what we have to offer.
Excellent. So do you do this every year where, like, you know, season ticket holders can come? So let me make sure I understand this correctly.
Right.
If you want to be a season ticket holder, you can come in and kind of see where you'd be sitting and kind of play it out.
Exactly.
Oh, that's excellent.
And also, if you've already purchased your tickets, you can come and pick them up, pick up your packet with the whole season of tickets, and you can make changes or add to it or buy other tickets and, you know, just get it all straightened out.
Yeah.
Just get a little excitement going. People just love it, you know.
Excellent. What else you got cooking?
Well, I'll go back to the music. We do have lots of music shows. Some of them are tributes, like we have MJ Live, Eagle Mania, and then we have a real interesting one, the Johnny Cash Experience.
Ooh.
And this show, it has clips from his TV show. You know, he had a TV show back in the 70s, and once the show was over, none of those were ever seen again. You know, they haven't been rerun or anything. So they're going to be using clips from that show, and along with interviews from his son and some of the performers that performed with him. And there's a live band there that will be playing music along with it, to, you know, so you get the live music experience.
The big question I have is, because I'm a big Johnny Cash fan, will I be able to sing along? Is that
of course?
Is that
of
okay?
course. Of course.
I don't
whether
know.
Your neighbors like it or not,
I was
you
about
can
to
sing.
Say, I was about to say, you might get people running out of the audience if they hear me sing.
That happens often, but we expect it, and everyone should, because, you know, when you feel good, sometimes you just can't help it. You got to sing.
Absolutely. You got to let it go.
You got to sing.
Yes. All right. Well, Shelley Henley, publicist for FSCJ Artist Series. Sounds like we've got an amazing season coming up. I can't wait. I really want to see the one. What was it? Seven? Was that
six?
Six.
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 Yeah. Henry had six wives, and they all ended up passing away. I think except one, but eventually, of course. But so they all have a story to tell, and it's very interesting, you know, as to what happened to all these women.
I mean, six, and they all pass away feels
right.
suspicious.
Yes.
Like,
it just,
like my spider sense is tingling. I got.
Well, you'll find out all about it. Some were beheaded, others weren't, but we'll just have to find out.
All right. Shelley Henley, thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
And we'll be back.
To my mind, bring it on in a different tide. I feel all
And welcome back. You are listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair in Studio 2 at WJCT. It's Thursday, y'all. Thursday. Just one more day till we get to... Someone told me that Friday is Weekend's Eve. One more day till Weekend's Eve. Which Weekend's Eve is kind of cool, right? I'm sitting here with Matt Shaw, my buddy, and we're just like riffing.
I like Thursday's the new Friday. That's my favorite one.
Ooh. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So welcome back to WJCT, where Thursday is the new Friday.
There we go. There we go.
The new Friday. So the Jacksonville Music Experience team covers all the latest music news and artists far and wide, including those making music right here in the 904, adding all the best cuts from national and international and even local artists to the rotation. The Independent on 89.9 HD4, Jacksonville, WJCT's new music discovery station. Arts and culture editor Matt Shaw is here to share three new songs that have been reviewed by Jax Music Org and added to the rotation on The Independent. It's our JME DJ Sessions. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing well, man. I got some new music to play for you. I'm excited to play it. And I wanted to shout out, we just started a new Friday newsletter added to our rotation of newsletters. So Tuesdays, we send you... the best, our staff's picks for the best concerts of the week.
Yeah.
And now Fridays, we're sending you five new songs to add to your playlist for
Sweet.
The weekend.
So, all right.
Yeah, so a little preview of that today. Bunch of new music to get caught up on. First up, I want to talk about Mitski. This is an artist that many of our listeners might have heard of. She had a breakthrough in late 2022 with her album Laurel Hill, a synth-heavy dance pop album, which debuted at number one on the Billboard charts, making it really the first real indie breakthrough since probably Frank Ocean's Blonde a couple years before that. She's been hailed by NPR as the poet laureate of outsized emotions, which I really love.
Nice.
That phrase. Yeah, she's been a pathbreaker for artists like Phoebe Bridgers, Soccer Mommy, women with guitars carrying the torch of rock and writing and singing about real stuff. Anyway, her new record, Mitski's new record, is called The Land Is Inhospitable and So Are We. It's absolutely gorgeous. The first single is called Bug Like an Angel. It's got this cinematic soundscape, chorus of singers. It's a nice introduction to what I think will end up on a lot of people's best of year-end lists. So here's Mitski with Bug Like an Angel.
So we're going to take a quick break, but we are going to come right back with Matt Shaw and more music. And I love this song. Thank you.
Scenic Jacksonville presents the Great City Symposium, October 4th. A.G. Lafley, former CEO of Procter & Gamble, shares how he led the revitalization of downtown Cincinnati and the Sarasota Bay waterfront. Tickets at scenicjacksonville.com.
The Jacksonville Symphony's Florida Blue Classical Series opens September 29th and 30th. With the premiere of Lowell Lieberman's Organ Concerto and Schumann's Second Symphony. Visit jacksymphony.org.
WJCT Public Media invites you to an evening with Amna Nawaz, co-anchor of the PBS NewsHour. Amna Nawaz will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, on stage for an enlightening and engaging conversation. Tuesday, October 3rd at WJCT Studios. VIP reception is at 6 p.m., followed by the presentation at 7. For tickets and more info, go to wjct.org/events.
Recent pro-Russian comments from Pope Francis disappointed many Catholics in Ukraine. They say comments like the Great Russian Empire make it appear that the Vatican has taken sides.
How would Jesus explain what is going on?
Ukrainian Catholics respond to the Vatican in time of war. Next time on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
World leaders gathering in New York face a range of pressing and competing demands caused by earthquakes, floods, famine, and war. But the UN says more and more of its members are not making good on promises they've made to help.
Unfortunately, when it comes to cutting public spending, overseas aid is often the first victim.
How do we combat global donor fatigue? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Okay, so we said this artist was Mitski.
That was Mitski, yeah. Brand new record came out September 15th on Dead Oceans, which is an indie label. And like I said, you know, she had a big pop breakthrough on the Billboard charts and all that stuff. So
nice. Yeah. I love this. I love this.
Yeah,
I love
beautiful.
This.
Beautiful. Yeah. Definitely her most complex record yet. Very good.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WJCT. First Coast Connect, outlets, and sitting in the big chair talking to the man with the plan, Matt Shaw, art and culture editor at JME. And Matt is playing me some cuts of some new music. And this is Mitski, Bug Like an Angel.
Yes, Bug Like an Angel. And I want to move on because, you know, we're celebrating 50 years of hip hop this year. Public media across the board has been celebrating it. You know, PBS had the great documentary Fight the Power with mm-hmm. Chuck D. You've been doing segments here on First Coast Connect. JaxMusic.org has been celebrating hip hop. But, you know, it's only appropriate that we celebrate the artists who've made hip hop this global sensation, that we also look at some of the artists who've played a role in the development of that, the vernacular of hip hop as a musical culture. I read something recently that called hip hop producers librarians of music. Because that's kind of the thing in hip-hop, like finding a nice horn melody from this track, a vocal run from another track, a funky bass line and a beat. And if that's the case, then the drummer Tony Allen would have his own section in the library.
Absolutely.
For sure, maybe in the reference section. The late drummer fused jazz and African rhythms. He died in 2018, but before that, he made a record with Adrian Young, super producer, who did famously worked on To Pimp a Butterfly, Kendrick Lamar's mm-hmm. great record. And then Ali Shahid Muhammad from A Tribe Called Quest. They've got a label called Jazz is Dead, and they bring in sort of historical, like underrated jazz artists, and they re-record some of their music. So this is Jazz is Dead 18, Tony Allen, a song called Don't Believe the Dancers.
I absolutely love this. So I'm a big fan of Tony Allen. I actually have vinyl of his last record. I can't remember what it was called, but it's an amazing record.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is great. I didn't know about the record label either.
Yeah, they've done records with Brian Jackson, Marcos Valle, the Brazilian jazz artist. It's a great, if you're looking for a wormhole, you know, get on Spotify or whatever streamer you use and just look up Jazz is Dead and dig into those. There's 18 of these albums now, all sort of classic jazz artists that you need to know. And yeah, Tony Allen, I mean, just like not only was he sampled by artists like Common and J Dilla, but just his approach to drumming, you know, when you're putting together your beats on your 808 drum machines, you know, he really, when you're looking for something unique, a lot of people were listening to Tony Allen and the way that he approached drumming.
Yeah. What you got else for me?
So, Jalen Naganda, he recently released his debut on Daptone Records, another really cool record label that you should check out and, get into a wormhole on. Folks might know Daptone for their contemporary but retro sounding soul and funk albums. Artists like Charles Bradley, Sharon Jones had some big breakthroughs in the 2010s. Naganda's album is called Come Around and Love Me. Sounds like it was unearthed from a used vinyl retailer's, you know, rare soul crate or something, dusty jacket and all. He channels the production values of What's Going On era Marvin Gaye, a broad range of soul from like the classic Motown years, and it's a crucial mix, ox percussion, strings and horns, some chimey electric piano. But what I really love about his music is Naganda's voice is just insane. So I want to listen to a track called What a Difference She Made. Here's your introduction to Jalen Naganda. She lights up the sky as she sings the blues, like waking up to the sounds of birds singing. I actually discovered this artist like
maybe a week ago, yeah. And I've just been playing this thing nonstop. I love it.
Yeah, yeah, he's gonna blow up. He's like, you know, he's the next sort of Daptone artist. I think that's gonna be, you know, on a lot of people's playlists.
Excellent. My man, Matt Shaw, arts and culture editor at JME, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, I love listening to music with you, man.
All right. Listen, before we go today, I wanted to give a shout out and some love to the family of Jacksonville legend and hip-hop legend in Jacksonville. Buddy DeCastro, a.k.a. DJ Basic, who is a DJ around town. And just, I can't even put into words like what a good dude he was. He passed away this weekend. Major influence in hip-hop. He was a part of the phenomenal hip-hop group out of Jacksonville, Asimov. That also lost another member a couple years ago, DJ Therapy. And I just wanted to send as much love and shouts out to Buddy and his family. He will be missed on the First Coast. And he made such a difference here, not just with his music, but like who he was as a person. You'd go into a club and you'd see Buddy there and you knew everything was all right. And that's the end of our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.